get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No, I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Slipping in the polls on the eve of an election year, President Bush forcefully defended his handling of post-war Iraq and the economy Thursday in a visit to the nation's first presidential primary state. Bush recast his usual road remarks into a speech that portrayed him as a decisive leader who has dealt with challenges arising from terrorist attacks, two wars, and an economy that slipped into recession shortly after he took office. But unwelcome news awaited Bush in a new poll in New Hampshire. The statewide survey found that 54% of adults approve of Bush's handling of Iraq, down from 64% in June. And for the first time, less than half, 46%, said they approved of his handling of the economy, according to the poll by University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Nationally, Bush's approval ratings have dropped to the lowest levels of his presidency in recent weeks. Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger introduced key members of his transition team Thursday, saying the first thing they would do is conduct an audit to find out just how serious the state's deficit is. Schwarzenegger on Thursday also called on Governor Gray Davis not to make any more appointments or sign any legislation in the waning days of his administration, although Schwarzenegger acknowledged it is Davis's right to do so. Davis spokesman Stephen Maviglio said Davis will continue to make appointments and act on legislation. He added, the governor-elect might be interested in learning that bills that Governor Davis does not act on before October 13th automatically become law. In California, the governor may veto a bill, sign it, or allow it to become law without signing it. Virtually every food product in the United States will soon have to be registered along with its supplier as part of the fight against terrorism. Figuring that the best way to protect the nation's food supply is to keep better tabs on it, the government is requiring some 400,000 facilities in the United States to register themselves and their products with the FDA. More after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
The House of Representatives on Wednesday voted to change a law that has required wounded members of America's armed forces to pay for their own meals while recuperating at U.S. military hospitals. The House voted 399-0 to permanently scrap the requirement that service members reimburse the government $8.10 a day out of their own pockets for the food they eat while in treatment of their injuries. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey folks, John Madden here to tell you about the October Best Buys at Ace Hardware. Come in today and get Ace Royal Touch Satin Wall and Trim Paint for only $16.99 a gallon, our lowest price of the year. Backed by the Good Housekeeping Seal and a 25-year warranty, the Ace Royal Touch Satin is great for kids' rooms and other heavy-use areas. Plus, the helpful folks at Ace can help you match over 1,400 colors. So hurry into your local Ace Hardware throughout the month of October. Ace, the helpful place.
Quantities limited, available at participating stores.
With major corporations punting 200,000 American workers out the door every month, with middle-class wages being suppressed in every economic sector, from service jobs to high-tech, and with the consumer economy sputtering due to lack of public confidence that things will get better anytime soon, it's very reassuring to see the Congress step forward and intervene directly to pump new money into our economy by raising the wage floor. You say you haven't noticed any increase in your wages? Well, that's because you're not in Congress. Yes, by a bipartisan vote, our public servants have now lifted the wage floor for themselves by another $3,000 each. I say another because this is the fifth year in a row that these champions of fiscal integrity have hiked their own income at the expense of us taxpayers. In the past 5 years, their self-adjusting annual paycheck has risen more than $20,000, now reaching $158,000 per Congress critter per year. Of course, our so-called representatives can't even do this honestly and above board. Instead, they play a game called hide the pay raise. Here's how it's played. Years ago, Congress quietly snuck a provision into law that awards them an automatic cost of living raise every year, unless they vote each year to deny themselves the increase. As you might imagine, they've shown remarkable restraint in that regard, refusing to deny themselves a raise for 5 years in a row. Congressional leaders even insult our intelligence with absurd claims like this one by Dick Armey, the former Republican House Majority Leader. The Congress didn't vote themselves a pay raise. We just simply did not deny ourselves that normal increase in our cost of living that every other worker in America not only expects but insists upon. This is Jim Hightower saying, when I hear a doofus like Armey, I think, 100,000 sperm and you were the fastest?
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the Democracy Zone here, and we have Jeff is on the line. In our last hour, we were talking about right-wing bullies, or bullying in general, you know, in the media, in the world, how it happens, what it is, what's up for it. Our number, 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Denver wanted to weigh in on that. Thanks for waiting over the news, Jeff. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think my favorite quotes I've ever heard is, you are what you meditate on, just being on the same way as you are what you eat. And a lot of us don't realize that, you know, impressions are also food. And that
used to have a teacher by the name of Hamid Bey who said that what a man can imagine he can do, what he persistently imagines he cannot help but do.
Yes, and we have to struggle constantly. I mean, just listening to shows like yours, I've got, dealing with the political thing, I have to balance out my life with other things all the time, that I find myself even getting more aggressive. And I have found the level of discourse with most people is people consider discussion now fighting.
Yeah.
And, you know, very few people are actually able to discuss opposing points of view. I think F. Scott Fitzgerald said it well, the sign of an intelligent mind is to be able to hold two opposing concepts at once and not go insane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an exercise
it's called a tolerance for ambiguity. And one of the characteristics of the conservative psychology, according to that study that I was citing in the last hour, is a low tolerance for ambiguity, an intolerance for the inability to consider multiple dimensions to a problem. Everything in the world is black or white, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of, frankly, of an unhealthy worldview.
Yeah, and our society is feeding that, and I can, you know, I've got to be careful all the time to not buy into that myself, and, you know, always exercise to stay aware of, you know, my own psychology and all these things, and keep getting what we would call good food, good impressions.
Yeah, I think this is one of the key dividing lines between conservatives and liberals,
in the United States, setting aside the old-fashioned debates of the kind of Hamilton versus Madison conservative liberal, or the kind of debates that you would have heard on William F. Buckley's program back in the old days, and now it's more one of temperament in many regards, other than the people who have just been suckered in by the shtick. I think it's ironic that in the Time magazine, the October 13th issue, there's an article about Rush Limbaugh, who's apparently his talent is on loan from Siba Geigy. And at the very end, they say, on the drug issue, we should give him the benefit of the doubt. Why give him a fairness clause that he denies others? Rush's way is to rush to judgment regardless of the fact. Now it's his turn to be judged and his turn to hope that the judges may just be a little bit liberal.
Well, one of the things in all this, too, is like when you slide into it, you don't know you're in it. So it's like dealing with people who have this aggression. The question is always, how do you deal with them? It's like John Bradshaw said, you don't know you're in a spell until you come out of it. And so there's not the awareness by these other people. There's even this state of there are possibilities for other states of mind. I've got the bizarre case of spending the weekend with my best friend from childhood, and he and I could not be more opposite. He's an international arms trader right now. And yeah, I had considered becoming a monk in the past decade, so there's quite a difference there.
And yet you guys can still talk.
Well, I never attack. It's very difficult spending time with him, but I find after a few hours, all of a sudden a real much softer side of him comes out, and all of a sudden instead of talking about all his cars and stuff like that, he starts talking about English history and starts become a very mellow person. I just give him space.
You're getting. It sounds like what you're saying is that you can get him to be interested in your interests, but
yes,
but neither of you are essentially bullies. I mean, you just have different lifestyles.
I don't know about him in other situations. Yes, and he's not a bully in any situation we deal with.
Yeah,
but he is a driver.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's people pick their paths in life, but I think that there's an underlying psychopathology here. I'm not suggesting that it's necessarily evident in the case of any of the individual, specifically Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh or any of these guys. But I think that it is, as you suggest, in some way infecting our culture, and it's something that feeds on itself. And there may be a physiological dimension to it. The whole issue of cortisol exposure when children are developing, and all these kinds of things, stressful childhoods, people who are the victims of child abuse, people who have been violently abused as children, who grew up in constant fear for their life or for their safety, tend to become super control freaks and bullies when they grow up.
And we just need to keep remembering to keep eating good food ourselves so we don't dive into the same cauldron.
There you go.
Take care, Jeff.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate your thoughts. In this hour, I'd like to get into the question, are conservatives killing democracy with cold, hard cash? And also into this whole thing of what happened last night with the Democratic debates. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts and your take on it. Wesley Clark finally got into the discussion with something, I guess. I've said before on the program that I think that what we're seeing here is a battle for some would say the heart and soul of the Democratic Party. I would say for power within the Democratic Party, between those who are willing to sell themselves out to corporations, which is the Democratic Leadership Council and the Bill Clintons, charismatic guy whose heart was in the right place in a lot of regards, and yet was never saw, or if he did see, was willing to wink and nod at the incredibly corrosive and toxic impact of corporate money on American democracy. And on the one hand, those folks, and on the other hand, that part of the party that are represented by Kucinich and Dean and Carol Mosley Brown and Al Sharpton, who are suggesting that democracy should be about something beyond just providing profit opportunities for corporate cronies. And so anyhow, Wesley Clark, it seemed to me, was pulled out of the hat at the last minute in order to stop Howard Dean, because these folks who are in bed with the corporations saw Dean pick, frankly, I think that Kerry is part of that crowd. It may even be skull and bones. I mean, who knows? Yale graduate. But so they pull Clark out, figuring, okay, if Dean gets too much momentum, you know, he's the outsider from the point of view of the insiders in the Democratic Party. If he gets too much momentum, you know, we're going to stop him. We're going to stop him with Wes Clark. And in the first debate, he was given a pass. I mean, basically, or in his first, you know, his first challenges, his response to everything was, hey, I've only been in this 6 days. Or 8 days or 9 days or whatever it was. I don't know what's going on. Now he's finding himself on the defensive, and he's taking a bit of a different tact. Some quotes from last night. Here's we'll start. This is early on in the debate.
You're very familiar with the way the military works. Is that the right solution?
I think she's given us a lot of great ideas. Let me tell you the problem with what we did there. We went into it without a strategy for success.
With all due respect, General, we've heard about the criticism of President Bush. What I'm trying to determine here is what is the differences among the nine of you.
Yeah, and so ultimately, Wes Clark says, basically, I'm not going to go there, I don't think.
I'm not going to attack a fellow Democrat, because I think everybody on this stage shares the same goal.
And then he realizes that, you know, well, you know, but did you just say that you're not going to say that you're different from, you know, and this is supposed to be a debate after all and everything. And so then he starts kind of waffling.
I think it's really embarrassing that a group of candidates up here are working on changing the leadership in this country and can't get their own story straight.
And I think he was just, you know, he didn't have his own story straight at that point. It had become a bit of a mess. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and I've got a couple of calls here. Mike, the Heart of Darkness. Mike, where are you calling from?
D.C., of course.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
D.C., of course.
Oh, Mike in Washington, D.C. Hey, Mike, how are you today?
Okay, how are you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, I wanted to take issue with something you said yesterday, actually, and take issue with something you said today.
Cool.
Yesterday, you brought up the issue of Mayor Barry and his Coke bust.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, have you ever seen the entire videotape from start to finish that was used?
My recollection is that he was encouraged to use the cocaine by the agent that was in the room with him, and that was part of his defense, was that he was being entrapped.
Well,
is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah. The thing is that for the first 20 minutes or so, I mean, you have to remember this was an ex-lover of his. And for the first 20 minutes or so, he's trying to get her into bed. And she keeps on saying no, 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 and keeps pushing the crack pipe into his face. And he keeps blowing it off because he's interested in something else. Finally, when he gets it through his head that he's not going to get what he wants, he says, well, yeah, go ahead and give it to me. And that's when they break in and bust him. The thing, you know, it really was a setup, quite literally. Yeah. He was not there looking for drugs. I'm not justifying the man. I'm just trying to set the record straight that, you know, he originally went there for a completely different purpose.
Right. Okay. Point noted. Although, you know, we don't need to get into a discussion of the morality of Marion Barry. It's kind of an old story.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not defending the man at all. I just wanted to make sure that the facts were straight.
He was an interesting character, by the way. Gregory, right after, it must have been 1981, right after Dick Gregory and I had gone to Africa together, he brought me down to Washington, D.C., and Marion Barry and Fauntroy was his name, their representative. And there must have been about 12 guys in the room. I think it was like essentially the city council. And me and Dick Gregory, and we were talking, and he had the head of the prisons there and the head of the schools, and I was at the time the executive director of a residential treatment facility for severely abused and emotionally disturbed children in New Hampshire, the New England Salem Children's Village, and we were using diet as part of our, overall therapeutic approach, you know, a natural foods diet. And so Dick Gregory was really into this, and so he wanted me to talk to Marion Barry about, you know, how to get health food into the jails in Washington, D.C. And the conversation very quickly turned into what kinds of foods will enhance sexual performance. which I thought was very interesting. So that's kind of consistent with the story that you're telling there, Mike. So anyhow, your second thing that you wanted to argue with me about, we got about 5 seconds here.
Right. Just very quickly about the thing about children under extreme stress and so forth.
Right.
I think it's partially correct, but it also isn't all that correct. Elsewise, all of Europe would be a bunch of control freaks.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you about the resiliency studies when we come back from this break. Mike, you make a good point. I appreciate the call. Well, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
With major corporations punting 200,000 American workers out the door every month, with middle-class wages being suppressed in every economic sector, from service jobs to high-tech, and with the consumer economy sputtering due to lack of public confidence that things will get better anytime soon, it's very reassuring to see the Congress step forward and intervene directly to pump new money into our economy by raising the wage floor. You say you haven't noticed any increase in your wages? Well, that's because you're not in Congress. Yes, by a bipartisan vote, our public servants have now lifted the wage floor for themselves by another $3,000 each. I say another because this is the fifth year in a row that these champions of fiscal integrity have hiked their own income at the expense of us taxpayers. In the past 5 years, their self-adjusting annual paycheck has risen more than $20,000, now reaching $158,000 per Congress critter per year. Of course, our so-called representatives can't even do this honestly and above board. Instead, they play a game called hide the pay raise. Here's how it's played. Years ago, Congress quietly snuck a provision into law that awards them an automatic cost-of-living raise every year, unless they vote each year to deny themselves the increase. As you might imagine, they've shown remarkable restraint in that regard, refusing to deny themselves a raise for 5 years in a row. Congressional leaders even insult our intelligence with absurd claims like this one by Dick Armey, the former Republican House Majority Leader. The Congress didn't vote themselves a pay raise. We just simply did not deny ourselves that normal increase in our cost of living that every other worker in America not only expects but insists upon. This is Jim Hightower saying, when I hear a doofus like Armey, I think, 100,000 sperm and you were the fastest?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman, where our thinking and talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. Are conservatives killing democracy with cold, hard cash? And what about this bullying situation? And I still want to share with you my take on what the big event last night that I think got overlooked. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Mike in Santa Fe's on the line, wants to weigh in on some of these issues. Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mike.
I'm of the opinion that, you know, wealth is really a bigger problem than poverty. And the reason, if you get into this bullying thing, basically, you know, wealthy people have an agenda, and they expect to, they have the means to carry out their agenda, and it's for the rest of us to follow their agenda.
Right.
And we can maybe buy ourselves a new DVD or something when we're all done taking care of their agenda.
Well, you've just gotten right to it. I mean, this is the thing that I think was missed in the debates last night was when Jeff Greenfield, I believe it was, asked the question, and I don't have a transcript in front of me, so I don't have his exact words, but it was something to the effect of, at this point in history, fewer Americans than at any time since before the New Deal are willing to call themselves Democrats or liberals. And what's wrong with you guys? You know, why is it that people won't use these words? Now, Dick Gephardt responded by saying, well, maybe people won't call themselves that, but they're still voting as Democrats. That, you know, and Al Sharpton pointed out that Al Gore actually got more votes than George Bush, and Gephardt pointed to some electoral victories. But the larger question never got answered, which is the question of, you know, why has the word liberal become a curse word? And my suggestion is that it's all about money. It's about the takeover, the very intentional, very methodical, very thoughtful, step by step, let's do this, starting in the early 1980s.
Right.
Joe
wealth,
Porter is one of the
wealth has become is inflated now, you know, to gigantism. I mean, you know, people that are like Bill Gates and people that are like multi-billionaires over, I mean, it's just reached a point of absurdity,
yeah.
You know, to have somebody working for $5 an hour at a McDonald's and have somebody else be that overpowerful.
Historically, we have, in the larger history of humankind, and particularly when you look at all cultures, not just, you know, Western society, but all the various indigenous cultures and whatnot, historically, great wealth, obscene wealth, has been considered an obscenity. It's been considered a sign of a form of mental illness. The Native Americans according to Professor Jack Forbes at the University of California at Irvine, who himself is Native American, had a word for it. They called it wetiko, which means cannibal, one who eats the life of another. And this was the mental illness that people had who felt the need to accumulate in the face of hunger on the part of other people. And I think that, you know, it flies in the face of Christianity. It flies in the face of ultimately of the best values, the highest values of America and of democracy. And yet it's at the core of the conservative agenda.
So how the question that I have is, how do you reduce this extreme wealthy power so that people's personal agendas, people can live their lives again?
Yeah. Well, you do it by going back to the golden age of the middle class in the United States, which was basically from the 1940s through the late 1970s, when you don't do it the way that Karl Marx suggested or that Stalin did and just, you know, take everything away from people. But basically you say, hey, if somebody's going to make over $10 million or over $100 million a year, they're getting a disproportionately large benefit from the substrate of our society, of our culture, from everything that we all do together to make it possible for them to live in this world, they can pay a proportionately larger share. And, you know, when the top marginal tax rate was 70% or 90%, Jack Kennedy cut it down to 70%, and then Ronald Reagan cut it down into the 30s. And that's when, the real problems began. But back when the top marginal tax rate was high, you didn't see these things. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Mike, thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The west coast of the United States has to deal with smog from Asia. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Ozone is a component of smog, and ozone levels along the west coast have risen noticeably in some places. A recent article in a scientific journal says that day-to-day levels of ozone have risen by 30% in some places that are otherwise free of air pollution. The article says the reason for this increase is pollution that travels across the Pacific Ocean. Dan Jaffe is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Washington. He says most ozone pollution is tied to fossil fuel emissions. When these gases get into the air, they react with sunlight, and ozone is the result. Jaffe studied 20 years of ozone readings over the West Coast, and he compared them to air quality information and weather records from Asia.
There is lots of evidence that pollution in Asia has increased over the last 20 years, and there's also evidence that ozone over Asia has increased. So what we've done here is to put different pieces of this puzzle together. We analyzed the best data we can find on background ozone on the West Coast. That, combined with the fact that we know pollutants can get transported across the Pacific fairly efficiently, and the fact that we know that combustion has increased over Asia and ozone has increased over Asia. Putting all those together, the most likely conclusion is that that ozone increase in the West Coast is in fact due to Asian emissions.
Jaffe says the big message from this research is that when it comes to air pollution, we are all downwind.
That is really the message. I mean, our pollution here goes somewhere else. Emissions from North America impact European countries. Emissions from Asia impact us.
That's atmospheric chemist Dan Jaffe. His research was recently published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Boil me in oil, cast me into hell. I'd never vote for Dan Quayle. More scary than Brainy. I did not vote for Dick Cheney.
Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We have Joe and Michael, Joe in Brookings, Oregon, and Michael in Santa Fe on the line. And if you guys can hold on just a second, I first want to get, I want to just play this one clip here. I've got a couple more clips from the debate last night, and I think it's important to recalibrate. The first half hour there, it sounded like I was complaining about Wesley Clark. Frankly, I will vote for any Democrat up against George Bush, bottom line. Although I really do think that there is this battle going on within the Democratic Party. And I think that Wes Clark is part of the Stop Dean thing. But here, this is Al Sharpton, and he, after, You know, John Edwards had talked about his blue collar background, and somebody, one of the candidates, I forget which one, you know, or maybe it was the moderator, sort of essentially said, you know, well, why is that a big deal? And he tried to say that, you know, it's, well, it's, I can identify, blah, blah, blah. And then Al Sharpton made a really good point. I think this is what America is all about. And Al Sharpton said it so well. Oops. Hang on just a second here. Got it in the wrong place. There we go.
I think it is important you tell that story from a different vantage point. The reason is I think it inspires young people to know that they can start somewhere in life with disadvantages and become what he's become. And I think that that kind of intangible inspiration is good. It has nothing to do with votes. It has something to do with hope. And as someone that came out the projects that needs to hear somebody like him say, I rose from being a mill worker's kid to being a successful lawyer and a presidential candidate, it may mean that I would choose a different route in life, and he ought not be criticized for that. I think he ought to be saluted. And I think...
Yeah, and well said, Al. Thank you. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon is on the line. Hey, Joe, how are you today?
Fine. Speaking of multi-billionaires, as the previous caller was, I don't see that much difference between the Wesley Clark phenomenon and the Ross Perot phenomenon we seen 11 years ago, because nobody even knows what Wesley Clark thinks about the issues. Nobody even knows what he's all about. All they know is he has all this military credentials, and he was in Vietnam.
Yeah, but Joe, isn't there a fundamental difference in that Perot never had to participate in primaries, and you know, I mean, he did the debate, but
I was going to get around to that Wesley Clark has all this admiration for being a military hero and all that. You know, I've been hearing, you know, Wesley Clark transcends politics. Well, I mean, here's this guy 2.5 years ago talking about the Bush dream team, the so-called savior of the Democratic Party. I mean, why ain't he running as an independent? Why ain't he running as a Republican against Bush Jr.? Hell, Bush don't even have any competition for the Republican primary. Why do we need another Democrat running for president? We don't even know what the guy supposedly stands for. I mean,
to cut him a little slack here, my guess is that 3 years ago when he gave that speech at a Republican event, he was basically speaking well of his boss. And I think you can, you know, I mean, any of us who've ever worked for a living can understand somebody doing that.
Oh,
and,
well,
and
he voted
thinking someday I'm going to run for president against this guy.
Well, he voted this is a setup by the Clintons, whether it has anything to do with Hillary Clinton running for president herself or not. I mean, who knows? But obviously the Clintons would rather see some centrist nerd like a Clark or a Lieberman or a John Kerry run and lose than to see a Howard Dean run for president and win, because he's too far to the left. And if Howard Dean wins, the Clintons and all these other centrist guys, they'll be out of power. They'll be out of power in the Democratic Party. Nobody will listen to them anymore, and they don't want that.
Yeah, it could be, Joe. It could be. Thanks for the call and for sharing that. I do think, though, I really do think that Wesley Clark, you know, I don't see this as a conspiracy on the part of the Clintons. I see it more, and frankly, the right wing loves to pull the Clintons out of the hat and make them the boogeyman for everything. I do, however, see that there is a battle going on within the Democratic Party over what are the values? I guess that's really the bottom line. What are the core values of the Democratic Party going to be? Are they going to be the New Democrat values, which is embracing corporations? Or are they going to be the FDR Democrat values, which is taking on corporations head-to-head and saying, no, we are not going to let you have control over this country. This is a government of, by, and for we, the people. That's the unique and extraordinary thing about American democracy, is that this is a government of us, and we're not handing it over to a corporate elite. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and Michael in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Michael.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. The last caller, and you guys are stealing my fire. I guess, okay. quote Howard Dean, quoting Howard Harry Truman, if you run a Republican against a Republican, the Republicans win every time. Now,
yeah, well, actually, I think the quote was, the Harry Truman's quote was, if voters are offered a choice between a Democrat who behaves like a Republican or a Republican, they'll choose the Republican every time.
Right, yeah, that's right. That's the quote. That's correct. Well, I have to agree with the caller. I think you're a little bit too kind on the Clintons, and I know you really kind of want to stay away from conspiracy things because it can never be proven, and you're a very fair-minded individual. But I have to say, when Leslie Clark entered the race, the first thing I did was get onto Howard Dean's website and send him another $20. I mean, I think
it doesn't require Bill or Hillary doing this. I mean, there's a bunch of old Clinton and Gore people involved with Wesley Clark.
True,
yes,
true.
Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that Bill or Hillary are sitting back there going, I think I'll pull the buttons on this one. I think that it's just that camp. That's that wing of the Democratic Party that is kind of old politics.
Yeah, well, I'm sick of those guys. And you're right. If they nominate Wesley Clark, sure, I'll vote for him over Bush, holding my nose, going, well, you know, at least he's not near as bad. But, you know, I am really, 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 you know, I voted for Nader in the last election. I was so frustrated. I'm a Naderite that has folded into the Dean camp. And I do not think that the Democratic Leisure Council understands the anger out there. I mean, they say they can, you know, offer up candidates like this, and then kind of everything will be all right. I don't think they understand. They've underestimated completely the anger at money in politics in the Democratic Party.
Well, I think they're starting to get it, but I think they still believe that the only way to ultimately win politically, and they may be right. This is the scary thing. They still believe that the only way to ultimately politically win a campaign is to have enough millions or tens of millions, or in the case of George Bush, hundreds of millions of dollars that you can carpet bomb the voters on their television sets with, you know, your message, whatever your message may be, that you can control the message with money. And that the only way to get that kind of money is to go to the corporate elite, because that's who holds that kind of money in America.
Well, first of all, that's a Faustinian bargain. And second of all, Howard Dean has proven him wrong. If he gets a nomination, I think he can get $200 million off his website alone, because people are going to freak. I know.
That's the question, Michael, that everybody's asking is, has Howard Dean, you know, milked all the money out that's going to come from people who will give $20 bucks on a website? Or has he just begun to open the spigot? Nobody knows.
Because we'll always give him another $20. I mean, you know, we're working on tight budgets, so we'll give $20 once. That doesn't mean we're not going to do it again. I've done it three times. So.
Yeah, but how many people are there in America, I mean, who are on the Internet and who are politically active and who are web savvy and who are willing to, you know, is it 1 million? Is it 5 million? I mean, out of 100 million workers in America, out of the, 70, 80 million registered voters, I don't know the number of registered voters we have, but.
Okay,
you know,
thanks. I'll let you go.
Well, Michael, I'm just wondering, you know. Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. But, you know, this question, you know, will Dean be able to carry that? Will it drive deeper? Personally, I think it will. I believe that Howard Dean is going to be able to go a whole lot deeper into the cash pot on the Internet, and not just the Internet. That what's happening is that he's using the Internet to recreate the kind of political institutions and communities that we had in the United States back before television. What has happened since the 70s and 60s and 70s and 80s basically is the TV has caused people to disconnect from their communities. They've become these insulated little islands. People don't know their neighbors anymore. Somebody gets sick, you don't take over a casserole to them like they used to. It's a very different world than it was for those people who grew up in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and early 60s. And as a result of that, back, you know, the old time politics was precinct politics. You knew your neighbors. You went door to door. I mean, 1964, I was I was 13 years old, but my dad was in the Republican Party, and I went door to door for Barry Goldwater in 1964. And people still did that back then. And I would knock on people's doors, 13 years old, and tell them why I thought they should vote for Barry Goldwater. And it, that's just not happening anymore. It's unimaginable now. Because people, you know, our TV has just turned people's homes. It's this, the whole bowling alone phenomena has turned our homes into these isolated, insulated entertainment centers where we just kind of zone out on this drug. And what Howard Dean has successfully done so far, it seems, is that he has reached out and broken through that barrier. He has broken through the barrier of don't communicate with me that's out there in the TV world. As a result, in my opinion, of television or the change in our culture, I mean, whatever it is that's causing it, I place much of it on television, and is causing people to reform the kind of communities that you used to have in neighborhoods. Although these communities transcend neighborhood, but then if he can get those people to those Dean meetups, and he can get them back out on the streets, he could be bringing us back to these kind of politics. Let's hear just one more clip here from the Democratic debate last night. This is Dick Gephardt reviving an important old line.
If you want to live like a Republican, you got to vote for the Democrats. And we've proven it over and over again.
Amen, Dick Gephardt, and it's a great joke, and it's a great line. It's very, very well said. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Ruben in Phoenix has some thoughts on this in Phoenix, Arizona. Ruben, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, thanks for having me. How about that?
Thanks for calling.
Vote like a Democrat and be a Republican. That doesn't make too much sense, but I hear there's no difference.
Well, he said if you want to live like a Republican. In other words, if you want to live with a decent standard of living.
I was listening. I was wondering because I heard a Democrat and Republican voting either way is the same thing.
You heard that?
I was reading in the front page of the newspaper yesterday. It was Tuesday's actually, of the Arizona Republic, and it's because we had it here for a few days. But it said 50% of the people they polled said there should be gay marriages. Things are going south on us, huh?
What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, they're furthermore reporting in Arizona that half the different kinds of churches there are. You know, there's Methodist, Baptist, and different kinds of churches allow gay priests and marriages and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just as if they're. I think they're making this look real bad to the rest of the world. I don't know if it's.
I think the rest of the world is a lot more tolerant than you realize, Ruben. And thanks for your call. I appreciate you calling in. But apparently, you haven't been out there in the rest of the world. I have, and I've traveled around the planet. America is one of the most conservative nations out there in these kinds of issues. Frankly, Canada has now legalized gay marriage. It's been going on forever in many of the European countries. Holland. It'll be interesting actually to see to what extent the Republicans try to turn this into an issue, because particularly when you've got Dick Cheney saying that he's in favor of civil unions, and then you've got the Republican Party talking about having a plank that says no, they're not going to allow it. 1-800-TALK. Yes, Jane in New Mexico is on the line. Jane, what are your thoughts today on politics here?
I don't know where that other fellow just came from. I don't think you saw the Supreme Court decision. But anyway, that isn't what I called to say.
Yeah.
I called to say that bullies come in all different stripes. And in New Mexico, we have a really wonderful governor, okay? But this governor is driving 110 miles an hour on the freeway so he can get to a campaign thing, smoking a cigar in a no-smoking area at the university, calling the radio stations, telling them not to run ads that he didn't like. Bullies come in Democrat and Republican.
He's
a part of the group that's trying to push Clark. Now, I happen to like this governor, okay? I think he's one of the best we've had. But bullies, you know, when they get the power, it seems like they don't understand that we don't like bullies. And I don't care whether they're Republican Bush bullies, Patriot Act bullies, or Cheney bullies, or Karl Rove bullies. I just don't like bullies. So I just wanted to say bullies come in all stripes, and I hope that our Democrats can stop being bullies, too. And I said my piece. Thank you for letting me say it.
Okay. Well said, Jane. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Anna in Arcata, California, is on the line. Anna, what are your thoughts on all this?
Hello. Well, I want to talk about the anger thing because I'm normally a person who is very nice, you know, and I But lately, I'm so upset with the way that the world is going right now, especially this country. You know, the people who are in power. I'm Native American and Latina. I am disabled. I am a single mom. I am a college student. I'm an A student. I am a welfare mother. And, you know, I feel like everybody on earth right now is kicking me in the teeth for one reason or another. You know,
yeah, what a juxtaposition. Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I work very hard and I believe in this country. My father fought for this country, even though he got kicked in the teeth forever after that as well. Didn't matter, you know, and I hear all this baloney about, you know, patriotism, but, you know, the soldiers are getting cut and their money, they're on welfare. I have people in my family who are in the military that are getting ready to go to Afghanistan, but they're on food.
Anna, we're running out of time in this segment. You want to hang on over this break and finish your thought, or can you do it real quickly right now?
Sure. Well, I just want to know what I'm supposed to do with all my anger about, you know, how...
Okay. Well, let me address that right after the break. That's an excellent question. Anna, thank you for calling and for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're in the Truth Zone.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Why do I have to get this cold sore scab now? I've got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free and they are so good. You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween. Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood. And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
Yes, she is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Bantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk about what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
The Radio Free Speed Zone.
and Zelenak in on the Radio Free Speech Show. Joining us is the smarter, the better looking, the funnier of the Smothers Brothers, the more talented Tom Smothers. You have brought comedy and social commentary to the living room on the television screen with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. Is there a place today for something like that, something where free speech can be intertwined with entertainment?
Free speech goes without saying, you would think, but we're censoring ourselves too much right now. The government has a point of view, and anybody that disagrees with it, you're not patriotic, you're a treasonous, you don't agree with the government's position. And that's what happened back in the 60s, and it's happening again now. So it's kind of depressing in that way.
They almost wrapped the First Amendment in an impermeable shell of patriotism.
Aha, that's right. The only person that has a right to say anything is them. This is great to be out where people don't talk over you and be rude to you.
The Radio Free Speech Zone, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman, uncommon sense from the radical middle. Anna, your the question that you asked, I just want to say, George Washington, our quote for the day, said, "Let us therefore animate and encourage each other and show the world that a free man, a free person, contending for his liberty on his own ground is superior to any slavish mercenary on earth." In other words, if we hold up the ideals of democracy and the idea that we can have of a liberal democracy, of a country that cares for each other, of compassion, of concern, where we are really and truly here for each other, where we really act out and live out the ideal that as we do to the least among us, we do to all of us, that as we awaken people to that being the primary ideal of America, we can bring about that kind of a transformation. We need to get politically active, of course. We need to get people registered to vote. We need to wake people. But the main thing is to awaken people back up from this dream that the right-wing talk machine has put them into, that says that America was founded on greed and materialism and that the founders were just trying to create an economic system of wealth for the wealthy, and it should be that way, and only the aristocracy should rule, I heard one of these I don't want to name him anyway, one of these right-wingers on the radio the other day talking about the tax cuts, and he says, "I never heard of somebody creating a job who wasn't a rich man," and it's just a lie. Yeah, I'm not a rich man. I've created a job. I've started 7 companies in my life. Most entrepreneurs, most people who start small businesses are not wealthy. I started a business in my bedroom. I started a business literally in my garage. So it is, the American dream is alive and well, and what we need to do is awaken people to it. We need to reinvigorate this idea that taxes aren't an affliction or a burden. The taxes are the extraordinary opportunity to live in this democracy, to participate in this democracy, and that paying taxes and participating in this in a very real and meaningful way is a healthy thing. That you know, our commons is something we hold collectively, that we care about it, and that we are going to take back democracy from those who say, "Oh no, corporations shouldn't have to pay, the rich shouldn't have to pay, it, you know, it's just the middle class. There should be lower taxes on corporate dividends and they." Nonsense. We can throw these guys out in November of 2004, and I really believe it's going to happen. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Coming from the field, that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Slipping in the polls on the eve of an election year, President Bush forcefully defended his handling of post-war Iraq and the economy Thursday in a visit to the nation's first presidential primary state. Bush recast his usual road remarks into a speech that portrayed him as a decisive leader who has dealt with challenges arising from terrorist attacks, two wars, and an economy that slipped into recession shortly after he took office. But unwelcome news awaited Bush in a new poll in New Hampshire. The statewide survey found that 54% of adults approve of Bush's handling of Iraq, down from 64% in June. And for the first time, less than half, 46%, said they approved of his handling of the economy, according to the poll by University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Nationally, Bush's approval ratings have dropped to the lowest levels of his presidency in recent weeks. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld canceled a news conference Thursday, in part to avoid questions about whether the White House recently reduced his role in Iraq's reconstruction. The White House said Monday it is creating an Iraq stabilization group to be headed by National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, which will be responsible for handling the day-to-day administration of Iraq. Rumsfeld was questioned at Wednesday's NATO press briefing about his relationship with Rice, a memo she circulated establishing the new Iraq Stabilization Group, and whether he was in the loop. Rumsfeld was scheduled to brief reporters at a meeting of NATO defense ministers in Colorado. The defense secretary has said everything he has to say about it, Pentagon officials said. Virtually every food product in the United States will soon have to be registered along with its supplier as part of the fight against terrorism. Figuring that the best way to protect the nation's food supply is to keep better tabs on it, the government is requiring some 400,000 facilities in the United States to register themselves and their products with the FDA. More after this.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Police didn't have to use DNA or fingerprints to track down a Muncie, Indiana man accused of breaking into a vacant house. They traced his dentures. Investigators said Paul D. Lee's false teeth apparently fell out when he stumbled after breaking into a house that was being remodeled. A relative of the home's owner found the dentures in the garage the morning after the September 23rd break-in and called police. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Toyota owner.
owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at Toyota.com/owners.
What is the price of a city's soul? The top bid so far is $166 million. That's the sum that one company has paid to get corporate branding rights to New York City. In accepting the cold cash, Mayor Michael Bloomberg has callously changed this great city's slogan from the Big Apple to the Big Snapple, having now made the British-owned beverage conglomerate the official drink of New York. The Snapple deal is but one of a sweeping and smarmy sell-off for the proud city's soul to assorted brand-name hucksters. To handle the devilish deals, Bloomberg has even hired a chief marketing officer who blithely proclaims that this is the start of a select number of really high-quality partnerships. High quality? Check it out. For its cash, Snapple will get the exclusive right to place its vending machines in all city properties, starting with New York's 1,200 public schools. The claim is that Snapple's fruit blends, Yoo-hoo drinks, canned water, and iced tea are better for kids than, say, Coca-Cola, which has been banned from the city's schools for nutritional reasons. But hold your empty-calorie, sugar-loaded concoctions right there, say nutritionists. It turns out that Snapple's fruit drinks have even more calories and sugar than Coca-Cola does. The Center for Science in the Public Interest reports that the Snapple drinks are pretty much the same as a 12-ounce Coke. And as for Snapple's cans of water, one nutrition leader wonders why children are being charged to get a simple drink of H2O. Water is a right, she says, adding that New York is supposed to have the best tap water and we're asking children to pay a dollar for Snapple water. Mayor Bloomberg, however, is a corporate creature who can't even begin to grasp the concept of free water. He says, I don't think in this day and age we can take vending machines or should out of the schools. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time to put the public back in our public schools and get the corporate profiteers out.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, friends. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman of the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast. On terrestrial radio stations through the network, also down from outer space in the Sirius satellite radio system, Chaz Stream 145, and also broadcasting live on several different internet channels, radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com. You can find it all at tomhartman.com or liberaltalkradio.com. Our guest this hour is Paul Krugman, one of my heroes. Paul Krugman writes a semi-weekly column for the New York Times, a winner of the John Bates Clark Medal for the best American economist under the age of 40. He teaches at Princeton University. His latest book is The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century, an extraordinary work. And, Paul, I am so pleased and honored to welcome you to the program.
Well, I'm glad to be on. Thank you.
I'd like to, first of all, if you can... fill us in here. I'm not an economist, although I play one on the radio, I guess, from time to time.
It's okay. I play a political pundit on the radio. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. And John Maynard Keynes had this idea of the marginal propensity to consume. You know, his suggestion that when money went to people in the middle class,
and below, that they were more likely to immediately spend that money and create a more rapid velocity of cash within the economy than when money goes to people at the very top who have more of a propensity to save. And it seems to me that, you know, I don't know enough about Keynes' overall stuff, but that seemed to be one of his key concepts in my mind anyway, and that as whenever we move away from that and towards kind of Milton Friedman economics, we get into these crunches like we are now. Do you see the relationship between the cycle, the economic cycles that are happening and these economic philosophies, or do you think that there's something else playing out why we're having a recession now and like that?
Well, let me say, I think we had a recession because we did have runaway excesses during the 90s. You know, we did have the dot-com bubble and all of that, and there was going to be a downturn. The question is, have we done remotely the right things to get us out of that downturn, to create jobs? And right. Here's where the stuff you're talking about, Keynes and all of that, comes in. The immediate problem in the U.S. is that there isn't enough spending. There isn't enough spending that creates opportunities for people to get jobs. And what can you do to create jobs during a prolonged downturn, which is what we've got here? First of all, you can actually directly create the jobs. You can have the government employing people to do useful things until the private sector is ready to start, you know, investing again. We haven't done that. You know, in fact, we've done the opposite. During downturns, the federal government always provides aid to state and local governments so that they don't have to lay off school teachers and firemen and policemen in the face of a downturn. They didn't do that this time. The next best thing you can do is to give money to working people in the middle and lower parts of the income scale who need the cash and are likely to spend it. We didn't do that. We've had the tax cuts have given very little to the bottom 60-70% of the population. The last thing you can do is give money to people whose stuff money into the pockets of people whose wallets are already bulging. And you know, there was some argument about economists: is it really true that tax cuts for rich people don't do very much to stimulate the economy? And we've now had a great test of that. And 3 million lost jobs proves that the complaint was right. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
Budget deficits. Here's my favorite number on this. Sorry, I'm going on, but we're talking about budget deficits of $500 billion plus, of which $300 billion is due to those tax cuts. The average salary of a worker in the U.S. is less than $50,000. If we just hired people to do stuff, that a budget deficit this size would put 10 million workers to work. Instead, the administration is boasting about the fact that last month, maybe, if the numbers don't get revised, we created 50,000 jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's remarkable. Now the conservatives, on the other hand, are saying, well, there's lag times in there. They, you know, really this is, this isn't the recession. That things would be much worse if, you know, and in fact, I remember people during the Carter era saying that the inflation that was experienced during Jimmy Carter's time was the remnant, the last echo of paying off the debt of the Vietnam War, and was really, you know, on Richard Nixon's watch. And of course Nixon had, you know, wage and price controls, and Jerry Ford with his whip inflation now stuff. Maybe there is some lag time there. Do you think that that's a realistic argument of any sort?
Oh gosh, you know, the first tax cut, the one that was going to solve all our problems, took effect in June of 2001.
Right.
And that's so we're now more than 2 years after the magic bullet that was going to solve all of our problems.
So it must be a 4-year lag, huh?
Yeah. So that, you know, this is kind of funny here, and and beyond that, we're really. Look, I mean, if they say, well, things would have been even worse without the tax cut, how's that different from the guys who do a dance every night to make sure that the sun comes off the next morning and say, see, it worked?
Right.
Yeah, we haven't had a Great Depression yet, but there's not a lot of positive success to show for all these programs. And the truth is that we kind of know that there are things that they should have obviously done that they didn't do, and we haven't had an increase in employment.
Yeah. Do you think that there will be a Great Depression?
Probably not. full-out Great Depression. I think we're probably, there's going to be, the U.S. economy is very robust, and it will probably stage at least a partial comeback no matter what these guys do. But you look a little further out, and you look at the scale of the budget deficits we're running, and we are really looking at, we're doing banana republic finances here. We're set up. By the numbers, we are actually less responsible than Argentina was before its 2001
crisis. I was just thinking about Argentina.
That's one of my, before I started writing for the New York Times, I was sort of an ambulance chaser. I spent a lot of time looking at crises in other countries and trying to head them off then now and then. And so this is a we're really bad. We're behaving very badly now. They've cut taxes. They've got the lowest share of revenue in gross domestic product since the Eisenhower years, and we're in pretty deep trouble. It doesn't come to a head right away because the bond market out there still hasn't caught on. They think, well, this is still America. They'll always get their act together. So in a way, you could say that Bush is living off the good faith and credit of previous responsible presidents.
Well, isn't part of that also that our balance of trade deficit payments, our balance of trade deficit is so bad that a whole bunch of other people on the planet are holding dollars. They've got to find a place to park them. They're parking them in treasuries.
That's right. It's an interesting thing. We've had a large trade deficit for a number of years now. During the late Clinton years, what was financing that trade deficit? What was covering it was foreigners investing in the U.S. It was Daimler buying Chrysler and people buying. That's mostly dried up. At this point,
now they're just buying debt.
What? Sorry? Now it's debt.
I'm sorry. I said now they're just buying our debt instead of
and
they,
building our
factories.
Who are they? It turns out it's not even private investors. At this point, it's governments. It's the Central Bank of Japan and the Central Bank of China are covering our deficits. And how long will they be willing to do that? So it's actually, we have a lot of built-up credit from past responsible policies, and a lot of the U.S. gets a lot of forbearance because of that. But one of these days, they're going to realize that we actually have a very different kind of people running our country right now.
Yeah, and if they pull out, boy, do we have a problem. We're speaking with Paul Krugman, a New York Times columnist, author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century, an extraordinary new book I urge you to rush right out and get. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. If you have a question for Paul, Pablo in Santa Fe is on the line. Paul, do you mind taking a few questions from our listeners?
I'm happy to do it.
Okay, great. Pablo, come on in.
Yeah, Paul, I'm an avid reader of your column in the New York Times, and I look forward to that whenever it comes out. I was looking at a graph or chart recently that showed the corporate tax rate, from the 50s on through the present.
Yeah.
And it seems like, is there some corollary between, home ownership, percentage of Americans owning their own homes, and seems like when the corporate rates were higher, that was rising as far as Americans owning, increasing amount of Americans owning their homes. Is there any connection that way, or how do you...
I'm not sure about the home ownership story. I mean, one thing that has happened is that corporate tax rates have been cut, but even more important, more and more loopholes have been opened up in the corporate tax code so that, for the most part, the corporate tax has withered away. There was a time when it was really collecting... about 50% of profits. Now on the books, it should be 35, but it's really 15. And one of the reasons why we're so deep in deficit, you say, well, my taxes haven't gone down that much. Part of the answer is, well, rich people's taxes have gone down. But the other part of the answer is that the corporate tax has been allowed to wither away. So, back when we had socialists like Dwight Eisenhower running the country, we were collecting a lot of money out of corporate profits, and now we aren't. It's one of the untold stories that letting corporations off the hook for supporting the government and the economy.
Thanks, Pablo, for that question. Paul, I'm wondering, what do you think about the changes in the money supply? I understand that just in the last 10 years there's been a dramatic upswing in the American money supply compared to the 50, 80, 100 years preceding that point in time.
Yeah. truth is, now let me just play professor for a moment. We don't know really what money is anymore. It's such a complicated set of things that act like money, from credit cards to various kinds of accounts that you can write checks on, that I wouldn't pay big attention to that. I mean, the interesting thing is that the amount of green stuff out there has been growing rapidly.
Actual cash dollars.
Yeah, largely in $100 bills. But that actually doesn't say a lot about the economy one way or the other. That's just the globalization of crime, and the dollar is the principal currency of illegal transactions around the world, although we'll get some rivalry from the euro on that one. So anyway, I stopped paying any attention at all to money supply numbers. They just don't tell you anything anymore.
That's interesting, because every time somebody creates debt, they inflate the money supply.
They inflate something. Debt I worry about a lot. I mean, we've certainly had an explosion of debt, personal, corporate, and of course now above all federal. And those are the numbers.
Let's get into that right after this break if we can. We're speaking with Paul Krugman, New York Times columnist, author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Paul, if you can hang on, we'll be right back after this break. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you have questions for Paul. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Toyota owners, get over to your Toyota dealer and get this feeling. The feeling of winning a $10,000 American Express branded gift card. Toyota's giving away 12 of them, plus 1,000 more worth $100 each. Just bring your Toyota into your participating Toyota dealer for service and enter. You'll get the very best service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter for your chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends October 31st. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents who are valid licensed drivers and 18 or older. Void in Hawaii. Official rules available at toyota.com/owners.
Tired of making minimum payments on your credit cards? Do you have a lot of credit card debt? Then call DITECH.com right now for a home equity loan with a no closing cost option. Pay off those credit cards once and for all without paying closing costs. A home equity loan from DITECH.com. Just call 1-800-DITECH-1. That's 1-800-DITECH-1. Or log on to DITECH.com for terms and license disclosures. Equal housing opportunity.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Yeah?
Have you bought your Halloween candy yet?
Not yet.
Well, I've got the best candy idea for you to give away on Halloween.
Really?
Juicy gummies.
Juicy gummies?
That's right. Juicy gummies are the first gummies made with real fruit juices. They're fat-free, and they are so good. You have to try them all. The peach rings, froggies, creepies, and much, much more. They're all delicious.
Yeah, they are.
Juicy gummies come in playful packages, fun shapes and colors. All the kids will be at your door when the word gets out that you're giving away juicy gummies on Halloween. Juicy gummies come in 30 and 50 pack bags, so there's plenty of candy for the whole neighborhood. And did I mention that these gummy candies are actually made with real fruit juices and fat-free?
Wow.
So if you haven't bought your candy for Halloween, rush on out to Walmart, Kmart, Eckerd's, Dollar General, 7-Eleven, Fred's, Kerr Drugs, Brooks Pharmacy, and many other stores nationwide. Sorry, ma'am, you can't eat all of our samples. Well, this store here sells juicy gummies.
Ooh, thanks.
Look for Juicy Gummies, America's first gummy made with real fruit juices. Boy, they're delicious.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Look, if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate you, kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
The
Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational, and you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy.
And you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah. I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Exposing the con and conservative, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. We're talking with Paul Krugman of the New York Times, the New York Times columnist whose columns are always provocative, thought, just extraordinary work, extraordinary body of work that that you have produced, Paul. Paul, am I pronouncing your last name correctly, by the way?
No, but I don't care. It's Krugman.
Okay, would you please correct me?
It's Krugman.
Krugman.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
not vain about it. Okay.
It's still, you know, faux pas on my part. I'm sorry. We have Rob in Philadelphia on the line, Joe in Illinois, and Armin in Florida. And we've got a few minutes here before break. Rob, this is 1-800-TALK. Yes, is the number, by the way, 1-800-825-5937. Rob, come on in. Ask your question here for Paul.
I'm a great fan of yours too. Tom Hartman's book got me thinking about the World Trade Organization and how it is problematic because it can override democratically voted upon laws. And you have Dennis Kucinich opposing it. And I know we need global trade, but with all your expertise in economics, are there alternatives to global trade besides the World Trade Organization that could recognize democratically voted upon laws that don't just create a situation where big business ends up going to the least expensive labor country?
Well, let me break in on this bit because there's some misunderstanding about what the WTO does. The WTO is basically in a position to say that law you've just passed is inconsistent with a treaty you've signed. It can't go along and say, well, you have to do something that isn't what you've already done. So it's not as if the WTO can go to Brazil and say, we now require you to throw open your industries to U.S. investment. It's just that if Brazil has signed a treaty that says that some kinds of investment are permitted by foreign companies and then it passes another law that in effect rules it out again, the WTO says you're in violation of your treaty. So it's much exaggerated what, you know, let's put it this way. I think there are a lot of things that scare me a lot more than the WTO. There are a lot of organizations that scare me much more than the WTO. First and foremost, I guess the Republican Party. And in the way it's actually working out is that the WTO, if it's going to work at all, will probably end up being a protection for smaller countries with less bargaining power. The walkout by a group of third world countries led by Brazil in Cancun a few weeks ago the point was because it was a WTO meeting, they had some leverage. They could basically say to the United States and the Europeans, if you don't give us a fair deal, we're going to just stop this process. If you didn't have that, if it was all bilateral dealings, then they would have much less leverage because they're just small economies. You know, I understand that there's a lot of upset, but I think the focus on the WTO as opposed to the corporations, as opposed to the increasingly hardline right-wing political movements in the U.S. is just, you're picking the wrong target here.
Don't you think, Paul, and thank you, Rob, for that call, don't you think, Paul, that at some level there is a merging of the two? You've got corporations claiming the rights of persons and protections under the Bill of Rights and asserting themselves as if they were nation states in some regards, particularly under, is it Article 11 or Chapter 11 of NAFTA? And at the same time, you've got corporations
participating in the political process in America in ways that historically they were prevented from doing.
I think that's the wrong tack. Actually, what's happening, you know, people talk about corporations versus the state. Events have been moving so fast, have been moving downhill so fast in this country that you've actually missed the train. We're no longer even talking about corporations. We're talking about individual corporate executives who are looting their corporations as well as the country.
Right.
So it's much worse than that.
And making out like bandits. Paul, we have a break here. We'll be back in just a minute. We're talking with Paul Krugman of the New York Times, author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
More startling revelations in a case involving two former workers at an IBM disk drive factory in California. They're suing the company for exposing them to toxic chemicals, which they say gave them cancer. A couple of weeks ago, the company inadvertently released a mortality study, which confirms that IBM knew its workers were afflicted with various cancers at rates higher than the general population. This week, worker questionnaires were made public. Dozens of workers have complained about headaches, blackouts, and other health problems while working around the chemicals used to make disk drives. And in their questionnaires, they say they asked management about the health issues but got the runaround instead. The trial in the California case is scheduled to begin on Tuesday.
Chicago began digging out from under 9 days' worth of garbage yesterday. Trash collectors with the Teamsters Union settled a strike with 17 of the Windy City's private waste disposal contractors. 3,300 waste haulers will see wages and benefits increase by 28% over the five-year contract, including an immediate dollar-per-hour raise. Previously, wages for trash haulers were as low as $10 an hour. The city's public trash collectors will assist as the Teamsters members try to move a mountain of backlogged garbage by Monday, just in time for the return of the Chicago Cubs to Wrigley Field.
An unconventional lobbying campaign involving the Amish has begun in Congress. They're asking that Amish children be exempted from federal labor laws. Many Amish begin apprenticeships in various crafts, usually after finishing the eighth grade. They say federal child labor laws restrict the duties Amish children can perform as apprentices, which violates their constitutional right to freedom of religion. The bill, H.R. 1943, currently has 41 co-sponsors in the House, but there's no companion bill in the Senate yet.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I got in this
it so. But then, what's the rush? Did I mention I never voted for a George Bush?
Welcome to the No Spoon Feeding Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist and author of The Great Unraveling, Losing Our Way in the New Century. Paul, in the introduction to your book, The Great Unraveling, you talk about a discovery you made reading Henry Kissinger's doctoral thesis, as I recall, and you use that as essentially a framing context or a framing device for your entire book, The Great Unraveling. And I think you did it brilliantly, and would like to give you an opportunity to just briefly share it with our listeners so they get a sense of what the book is about and also, you know, what you found in with regard to what Kissinger was saying about revolution.
Okay. Kissinger was writing about the French diplomacy in the age of the French Revolution, which seems pretty remote, but he was making it pretty clear that he thought he was talking about broader parallels. And what he talked about was how hard it was for people at the time, people who had been accustomed to a diplomatic system, blah, 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 that was very stable, where things only moved within certain limits, how hard it was for them to face up to the fact that they were now confronting a power, in this case revolutionary France, that really didn't accept the rules of the system, that didn't accept the legitimacy of it, and wanted to tear the whole thing up. And that, he said, when you're confronted by a revolutionary power, people who have been accustomed to stability basically just deny that it's happening, even if the guys that they're confronting say, we want to tear up the whole system. And what that struck me is that's what's happening in America right now. We are facing a revolutionary movement from the right. Call it a reactionary revolution, whatever, but we're facing a right that really wants to tear up the way this country works, the way that it has been for 70 years, the house that Franklin Roosevelt built. And they say it. That's the amazing thing. It's not as if this is deeply hidden or I'm talking about some hidden conspiracy. I'm talking about not what Bush says, because he always tries to sound moderate, but what the people behind him say.
They've been saying this since Ronald Reagan.
That's right. They're cutting taxes to starve the beast, so the revenue isn't there to support Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. They say that they want to do away with the separation of church and state. What I was doing in the introduction, what I do in the book, is trying to say to my moderate and liberal friends who don't want to face up to what's happening, look at what is going on. Look at what these people say. Look at how much they've managed to do already. Don't fall into this trap of dismissing people who are sounding the alarm as just being, you know, chicken littles. This is really the America that we all grew up in. Is in danger, and we really need to accept that that's happening.
The Reagan Revolution, the Gingrich Revolution, these guys really are thinking in a way that is completely different from the traditional values that have been held in this country. It's in my opinion, it's a return to feudalism. It's neo-feudalism. It's a return to rule by the rich.
Well, they talk nostalgically about. You say, well, do you want us to be back where we were in the 20s? And they actually say, no, we want to go back to before the progressive movement. So it's
McKinley.
Real Gilded Age stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Illinois has been patiently waiting with a question for Paul. Joe, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, actually, I've got some other thoughts while I was listening to you talk. One of the things that you just mentioning that they want to go back to this, you know, this idealized past that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Have you ever read Battle for God by Karen Armstrong?
No, I haven't.
Excellent book. Anyways, what you're describing is a classic fundamentalism. She describes it for Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. But I really think you're describing a fundamentalist view of our government.
One of the psychological dimensions of fundamentalism is a longing for a past that never really existed,
right.
An idealized past.
And feeling embattled.
It's
a reaction to you feel like you are being attacked, that your belief is being attacked, and you idealize the past.
And these are actually parts of a definable psychopathology.
Exactly.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Henry Kissinger, way back when, said that revolutionary powers feel deeply insecure, that nothing short of completely crushing the opposition, eliminating it, will satisfy them. And that's the way these guys are. I mean, if you look... they've got the presidency, they've got the Congress, they've got the courts. They've got a large part of the media, and they still act as if there's this liberal conspiracy against them, and we've got to stamp out everybody who opposes us. And fundamentalist they are in many respects, including literally. I mean, it's.
Yes.
I had a revelatory moment. I wrote a column about Representative Tom DeLay of Texas, in which I quoted him saying that his purpose in office was to promote a biblical worldview, and his remarks after the Columbine school shooting, saying that the reason things like this happen is because we teach the theory of evolution in high school. And I got letters and calls from liberals saying, you know, aren't you sort of going over the edge? What does it matter what some crazy guy in Congress has to say? Of course, Tom DeLay runs Congress. He's the House Majority Leader, the hammer. He is effectively the second most powerful man in the country. And and this is so people don't want to see what's happening. But if they don't wake up, it will be too late.
And that brings
for those of us who are out there, I'm sure that you probably have the same experience I do. Every time I write a column for Common Dreams, the last book that I had come out, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, and whenever I talk about these topics on this show and we pick up a station in a new city, I get death threats. Not just hate email, I'm talking death threats.
The machine will try to drum up scandals about your personal life, and you get stalkers of various kinds, including literal. It's not fun. It's
bizarre. They really and truly are fundamentalists of the way. And Joe, you said that you had a question and that you had a thought that had preceded it. Have you got to your question?
I would like a chance. My question is this: I mean, you guys and your listeners are obviously, you know, finding. Are the people who actually think, and I that's great. But my question really is what about the people who aren't ideologues, but you know, watch Fox News and don't understand the blatant lies that they're hearing? How does an average person, how does your listener get through? And I'm just going to give you an example. On the Department of Justice webpage, they had a big thing that said. Whites more likely than blacks to be more whites than blacks on death row, and if you ask 9 out of 10 average American citizens, they buy that hook, line, and sinker. What they don't understand is that, you know, 13% of the population is black, and 64% of the population is white, and that means that a black person has a 4 out of 1,000 chance of being on death row, while a white person has a 0.86. chance of out of 1,000 being on death row. How do we get past the point where every single thing these people are watching, listening to, and saying is so outrageously wrong that I just look at it once and see it as a lie, but 90% of the population looks at it and says, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, good one, Joe. And yeah, Paul, before you answer that, if I can piggyback one on the back of that, because I think it's the same thing, and it's something that I've been wanting to ask you, and Joe, thank you for that question. In this business, in the radio business, it's coming out, I'm discovering as you know, we're on a nationwide network here, but it's relatively small, and I think IE has a total of 130 stations coast to coast. If you look back at the history, you see that right after the end of the Fairness Doctrine in 86, Rush came out in 87, and he was in 56 major markets instantly with no advertising. And to this day, a lot of these guys on the right are buying time in major markets. They'll go into a city like Chicago or New York, and they'll buy block time. They'll buy 3 hours on a radio station for $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 a year, and then they have their own internal sales organization. They sell the advertising to and they hope that they can break even or make a profit. But for the first few years, very often they lose money, and they've been able to create this enormous, vast right wing machine in the media. I mean, the Mooney Times is still losing money.
Yeah.
Fox News took a long time before they started breaking even. You know, just by pouring cash into this thing and creating the illusion that American popular opinion is right-wing and conservative, and even liberals that I know and progressives and Democrats who are saying, well, gee, that must just be, that's what people want to hear. That's why radio's that way. And nobody on the left has gotten it, that there is a strategy here that Joe Coors and Stephen Bechtel and Richard Mellon-Skaffen and these guys,
I mean, one of the things I've been trying to do is, in fact, tell people, look, this is not just
a spontaneous thing. That there, yes, Virginia, there is a vast right-wing conspiracy. Look, I'll give you my example. I've got a book out. It's doing very well, and so have the other angry liberal books that are out there. So we've got Joe Connison and Molly Ivins and Al Frank and all, you know, hitting the bestseller list, which surprised everybody. You know, there can't be a market for liberal books, but there are still right-wing books on the bestseller list, and every single one of them has got next to it the little dagger symbol that says evidence of bulk purchases.
Right.
So a lot of these books are being pushed onto the list through essentially rigging the market.
They're buying big stacks of their own books just
right.
to drive them off the list.
Yeah, and now part of it there are well-intentioned billionaires. I once wrote that it was a shame that while George Soros was promoting democracy abroad, Richard Mellon Scaife was promoting it, was undermining it at home. And I'm happy to say that George Soros, who is a good man, is now putting quite a lot of money into trying to save our democracy here. But of course, the money is always going to be disproportionately on the side of the right. You have to make up for it by fighting hard, making your voice heard as best you can, and the only compensating advantage that the liberals have in this debate is that the facts are on their side, which, admitted,
yes.
is not that helpful. But it gives you a little bit of leverage.
But we get to tell the truth. You know, it's an extraordinary thing. 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Armin in Florida. Is that Bradenton, Florida, Armin?
Actually, Bradenton, Sarasota, right at the line.
Oh, okay. You're in Sarasota. And you're on with Paul. You've got a question here.
Well, first I'd like to comment that I really appreciate his writings and his insight and his balanced attitude that he has and open-mindedness. And I'm really glad right now with the right getting ahead of themselves too far that this gentleman's there on our behalf.
Well, amen.
And, really, I don't know what I could bring to this conversation. You guys pretty much carried out everything I was going to bring up. I was just going to simply say they lied about NAFTA, they lied about GATT, and when they took out the fairness doctrine, I wasn't paying that much attention back then, because typical human nature is if it doesn't affect you, you don't become as concerned as when it directly does.
Well, let me ask.
And then they got us.
And then it's too late.
Give these guys credit. They do think far ahead, We got about 30 years to catch up on now.
Well, Paul, you're connected to a lot of people that are influential, and that's obvious. And the Times is very powerful. And can't the elite that sits back and lets these people take them for a accumulating ride see that all these movements in the history of the globe have failed eventually because unbridled fanaticism of accumulation has no logic behind it or reason.
Okay, Armin, thank you for the question. Paul, your thoughts on that? Then I want to go to Vicki in Idaho.
When I'm in meetings of people who share my values and have some influence, for most of the past couple of years, I've come away from those meetings feeling a little despairing. They just don't get how serious the situation is. They say, we don't like these policies. And then everybody's got his pet project that he thinks should be promoted, and they want to be polite. They want to be nice. And for what it's worth, at least that's changing. I think people are starting to get their backs up and starting to say, we're having the old movie Network, where people lean out the windows and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
We're having our Howard Beale moment.
That's right. And I think we're having a bit of, but not enough. I mean, this is why there's a lot of I'm out on book tour, okay, and there's a definite feeling of almost revival meeting about a lot of these events, and there is that movement out there. I'm afraid that a lot of the liberals and moderates who still have positions of influence are still too comfortable. They say, well, it's okay for me. I don't quite see what all the fuss is about, and by the time it reaches their doors, it will be too late. So this is where
those
you really have to get
Pastor Niemeyer moments.
Yes, exactly.
Vicki in Idaho has a question. We only have a minute, we have 2.5 minutes here left. Vicki in Idaho has a question for you. Vicki, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. Okay, the question that I have is that we've had a paradigm shift in our economy. all of our high-tech jobs are being exported over to India because of the internet. But when I hear people talk about it, they always say, well, the American economy is resilient. That, I mean, we've lost virtually, you know, only 13% of our economy is in manufacturing, and we're losing it at a tremendous rate every single year. We're now losing our high-tech jobs. How do you, where does the optimism come from that says that the American economy is resilient and, you know, we're going to be able to feed everybody and take care of everybody?
Well,
great question, Vicki. Thank you.
This is a tough question. I mean, this is actually
Paul, we only have about a minute left here.
Let me just say, I think that things are not nearly as bad. That there's some loss of jobs to these things, but there are also new jobs that could be created, and we would have a lot more perspective on this, and we'd feel a lot better about it if we actually had a semi-responsible domestic economic policy, and then we could take a look and say, what do we need to do to keep those good jobs going? I don't think we just have to seal ourselves off. I think there's a possibility for a mutually beneficial solution here, but not until we have reasonably responsible and sane people running the government, which we do not at the moment.
So the solution is a political one.
The solution is political. The U.S. has the resources to deal with all of this. It's all politics. It's not the economics is easy. The politics is terrifying.
Yeah, and to get into the politics, we need to be spreading the word as much as possible. Paul Krugman's book, The Great Unraveling, go to your local store, buy it, check it out on the Internet, wherever you get your books from. It's extraordinary, losing our way in the new century. And, Paul, you might want to consider writing a column about liberal talk radio. It's coming of age. It's actually happening across America.
I will see if I can do it.
Okay. Thank you very much for being on the program today. It's been a true honor and pleasure. Thank you, Paul. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Why do I have to get this cold sore scab now? I've got a job interview this week.
The embarrassment of a cold sore scab is as painful as the sore itself. Do something about it. Try new Camphophonique cold sore treatment for scab relief. It's the only one that targets the scab with a special formula that provides maximum strength pain relief. Plus, it seals in moisture to help prevent cracking, to promote healing. Camphophonique stops pain, promotes healing, ends embarrassment.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Show.
We caught somebody doing something right. Fred D'Amato, Pocono, Pennsylvania. He put a sign out in his front yard to support our troops, impeach the Bush administration. Of course, Mount Pocono jumped all over him. The borough councilman, Francis O'Boyle, said, "The last couple words is what's the problem. I don't think it's right to put up a sign like that and say those things." The lawyer says it's protected First Amendment speech. John Finnerty, the borough council president, says, "Well, if we could all express our thoughts on a piece of plywood, just think what the neighborhood would look like. It might be a slight infringement of First Amendment rights," making him take down his sign. He's facing $500 a day fines for not having his sign. However, the story in the newspaper of Mount Pocono, New York, says that D'Amato removed the sign, but on Sunday said he planned to put it back up again. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of a brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman in the Democracy Zone. Intimidate, where the criminal prosecution may begin. John Dean today writes an article, not sure where it appeared. I don't have that right in front of me. But he points out that even those who did not leak the name of CIA officer Valerie Plame could face criminal prosecution if they had, you know, if they were even remotely connected to this thing. If George Bush, in fact, didn't say, do it, then the people working under him could be guilty of fraud, because in the government parlance, what counts as fraud under the statute, he says, simply put, any conspiracy for the purpose of impairing, obstructing, or defeating the lawful function of any department of government. As Dean says, if telephoning reporters to further destroy a CIA asset whose identity has been revealed and whose safety is now in jeopardy does not fit this description, I would be quite surprised, and suggesting that Karl Rove could get nailed for this thing. In the meantime, the FBI wants us to know that they have doubled the number of agents who are working in the White House to find out who leaked this CIA agent's name. Yes, indeed. Remember during the Clinton administration when there were over 140, is my recollection, as FBI agents total checking out Bill Clinton's sex life and whether or not he made $30,000 or lost $30,000 on a land deal in Arkansas back 28 years ago? Remember that? Well over 100 FBI agents. I don't remember the exact number. It was some mind-boggling number. Now they have doubled it up to 12. Oh, my goodness, we have 12 FBI agents looking into things. And they're looking into so many different things. They have the four-day delay by the Justice Department in asking the White House for evidence, the delay in the White House passing on the request to employees, the wait to ask the Pentagon and the State Department to preserve records, the fact that John Ashcroft remains responsible for the probe despite his close personal and professional political relationships with George Bush and his top aides. Longtime federal prosecutor James Ornstein writes in the Chicago Tribune that, quote, if Ashcroft continues to ignore the overwhelming majority who recognize that he should appoint a special counsel, he will put his own prosecutors in an impossible position and ultimately undermine national security. Let us hope that the truth comes out in this situation. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you, Joe and Louise. Engineered by Steve Damschroeder. Did a great job today, Steve, in Detroit. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today, and tune in Monday, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dogs?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you